Hi guys, so this evening I've got the wonderful Julia Bold from BBC Radio Merseyside, who's been very kind and agreed to join me to discuss the season 22-23. A lot of you probably know Julia from involvement with both the men's and women's first team at Goodison Park, seeing her in the fan zone and involved in various events as well as her work with BBC Merseyside. She also was the reporter and producer of the fantastic series Nothing Will Be the Same about Everton in 22-23. Julia, I know obviously that was something that you seem quite privileged to work on, but you probably couldn't have chose a better season to report behind the trenches at Everton, could you?
Yeah, oh, thank you for having me on. At the time, I didn't think that. I'll be honest, as the weeks went on, I thought I couldn't have gone in at the worst time. But now with hindsight, yeah, of course. And there was a lot of people at the time saying, oh, imagine if, and one of those series had been in there and it was all very secret, so I couldn't say anything. And yeah, with hindsight, yes. At the time, absolutely not. I thought it was the worst thing ever.
Well, that's interesting you say that because you come across so well. So for those who haven't listened to the series, I can't recommend it more highly enough. Julia's throughout it. I say it's hosted by Mark Chapman. It's kind of a narration because Julia's absolutely integral to it. She builds up rapport with so many key figures behind the scenes. And it started in the autumn of 2022, just before round time of the World Cup break. Things had started to spiral a bit under Frank Lampard at that point. The double defeat to Bournemouth. And he and Conor Cody openly come out and said was unacceptable the second defeat at Bournemouth. Did you get a feeling of tension when you first landed in the building to get behind the scenes? And obviously you worked with the club closely, but when you got that sort of access, was there a low mood in the club or was there a mood of optimism?
Yeah, it was weird when I kind of got put in there. Because yeah, as you say, sort of the World Cup break was just underway. So that was weird in itself because we'd never had that situation where, everyone's planning for Christmas and there's a World Cup on. So it was a bit weird anyway. No, there wasn't. Do you know what? There genuinely wasn't. There was sort of a feeling that that double Bournemouth week was a bit of a blip, maybe. And yeah, I think everyone accepted it absolutely wasn't good enough. But there was definitely sort of a sense of as everyone started to come back, sort of this feeling that we could put that behind us and we could move on, and that, once it restarts on Boxing Day, as long as we hit the ground running and get those results in. And I think there was very much a sense of, at that stage, Frank was going nowhere and he was in it for the long haul, and he certainly felt that, there was a lot of work going on. So yeah, it's I never ever anticipated at that stage that by the time, I sat and recorded with Frank before Christmas, I never anticipated that maybe in a matter of weeks he wouldn't be there at all. I think everyone thought, this was going to be very much the story. The premise was that it was going to be very much the story of, we all knew what had happened against Palace the season before, staying up with a game to spare. And it was how sort of Frank Lampard went on to get some stability, and the club got some stability and started rebuilding it. And obviously that's not what happened at all. But yeah, there certainly wasn't that kind of feeling of doom, and no one, I wouldn't say Frank had lost the dressing room or anything like that. It was a positive vibe, that was for sure.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, that does make sense in retrospect. Because I think myself included, some people go, well, it was clearly unraveling by the Bournemouth time. But actually, if you look back a little bit further, when we lose 2-0 home to Leicester City, we'd have gone into the top half and we'd won that game. So the league was, although we were down the lower end, it was still really tight at that time, wasn't it? So there was
Yeah,
definitely.
and it wasn't halfway either, was it? Because of
No.
this weird break, there was still more fixtures than had been played. So, yeah, I mean, it's easy with hindsight, isn't it? And I think sort of around when people started to look where Frank was sacked, there was a lot of people saying, well, he should have gone after the double Bournemouth week and had a clean sweep then. It's easy to say that in hindsight, and I don't think anyone expected, what would then happen to happen. And it unraveled so quickly, and I think that's what was quite surprising to it, and to be sort of in the thick of it. And then it wasn't just on the pitch, things off the pitch once January hit began to unravel really quickly as well. And those sort of two things going together, that was January. A lot of people say, what was the worst part? And I'm sure you will ask me about near the end of the season and what happened there. And people think, was that the worst bit? No, genuinely, the hardest bit was the January. It was not nice to see Frank Lampard as somebody who I know as I watched him play for England and being sort of an icon of the Premier League era. And so those scenes as well that we saw after Palace as well, sort of how he was then, to see how it impacted him, that wasn't pleasant to be that close to it. I didn't, yeah, I was quite sensitive to that, and I didn't, it just wasn't, it was just awful. I won't lie, there was quite a few tears shed either. Yeah, when I got home or sort of hidden away in a dugout in Finch Farm, because that was a tough experience. Yeah. And I wasn't actually sure if the club were going to keep us in either at that point. So yeah, I was thinking I've gambled my career on this.
Well, I can certainly say it was a gamble worth paying off. But going back to the point about Frank Lampard, I think that's it's quite. I get where you're coming from because he's an emotional fella, and I mean that as someone who's emotional. But I mean that as a compliment. And the one thing I would say is a lot of people who come into Everton, people like Ronald Koeman and Sam Allardyce, are not really maybe bought into Everton. For all Frank's flaws, I from the outside looking in, I got the vibe he was fully invested and really cared about Everton. And I do think, although it unraveled, we fans can talk all day about tactical issues and playing issues and whatnot. The one thing that I've never criticised him for was I always felt like he really cared about Everton, and I felt he was really sincere. And from that end, I was sad to see him go through it. And I think, he was. I know you have a close working relationship with the club, so I'm not asking you to say, oh, he's hung out to dry or whatever, but because it went on for a little while, that felt a bit unfair on him as well, as much as I think he was struggling.
Yeah, and I think that was hard. I remember being in the press conference before the Man United Cup game on the Friday in, and I think everybody sort of knew then what was going to happen, including him. And he just—I was sitting near the back of the press room, just watching what's going on, recording it, and thinking it's just not nice to see. And the press room was packed, and it's not always the case at Everton because if it clashes with different ones, but when it's packed, it's usually because things are not going well. And he's fielding a lot of questions about his own job and has he been given any assurances. And then in tandem with that, it started the off as well, and the board then weren't going to come to games ahead of, I think the press release that was released ahead of Southampton, which I don't think Frank needed that either ahead of that game,
No.
which was going to be a massive game for him. I don't think he sort of needed those headlines. And, I mean, we know now as well, we know, like looking at it from this point, that the owner, it isn't a present owner, and he wasn't then either. So I think that drags things on, and it's not nice to see that. It's not nice to see somebody under that level of pressure and sort of knowing where this is going. And then by the time the West Ham game came, and then all the board and the owner turned up to that, you sort of know why. And yeah, and I've never seen Frank again. I've never seen him since then. It happens. So people say, oh, what's it like? Does he quit? I've never seen him since. It just happens so fast. It's not like a normal workplace where,
No notice period, is there? It's just
no, and you
you
sort of
are
come
gone.
in and you have a collection and you sort of, there's none. It happens. And I think I found that it was interesting to see how players deal with that, because they're kind of used to that, particularly, that's been a revolving door at Everton with managers in recent seasons. So they kind of deal with it in their own way, and they're quite reflective. And no one sort of like, hey, let's get on with it. They kind of all have to get over that, but they got over it a lot quicker than I did, because I'm not used to that environment. And I was just, kind of, my head was spinning by the whole thing. So yeah, it's not pleasant at all to see that up close. And then there was a week without a manager then as well. So yeah, there was a lot happened in that January that, oh well, I don't want to relive that.
I'll try not to take you through it too much then in that respect.
Yeah.
It was tumultuous, obviously. You spoke with the players. I spoke to you before we started recording. I think a lot of the players come across really well, particularly Seamus Coleman. I know I'm probably biased. There's never told me because you hear Andros Townsend at the weekend being quite effusive in co-commentary when he was playing for Ireland against England. He come across well, but were there any players or situations that you felt because you were given such good access? Was there anyone you might would like to have heard more from, or you think you could when you look back that you would have liked to got a bit more to? I know it's so hard because you've got to manage relationships and confidences and whatnot. Was there anything where you think, well, maybe we could have got a bit more of that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we I actually record, like you're recording a lot more, and people say, what was the access like? Yeah, I had a staff induction when I was put in there, so that kind of shows
Wow.
you. Yeah,
Do you have a
that's they went
lanyard?
all,
Do you have a lanyard and
Everton
beanie
said,
on?
we'll give
Brilliant.
you a staff induction, and then you're kind of in place, really. So I had a desk in there, and I just turned. Yeah, it was very strict, to the point where, fast forward to the end of it was really odd because I felt like I left a job. It was the oddest thing because you become so immersed in it. Yeah, I mean, there's so much recording goes on that there's so many tracks that never get used. There's so many because you're recording not knowing what's going to happen. So I was thinking, well, we might not have enough stuff. So there was a lot of, I say storylines. When I say storylines, things that were going on or conversations that I was having, they're obviously real. They're not, we didn't write them. There was people I recorded with, and it never made the series. There was stuff with Ben Godfrey, and Ben's not even in it. Ben's not even in the series, but it never, you have to be quite ruthless by the end of it
Yeah.
because the series would have been like, I don't know, 100 parts, and you've got to kind of keep that focus and keep. And it was nice to sort of have some players are recorded with more than others. Some I recorded with, and you only heard little bits, but actually there was a lot more to that. And as I say, some people got recorded and ended up didn't even make it. So, yeah, I think Seamus is good in it because he kind of got what we were doing, and he got the whole premise of the series, and he understood it, and he's an honest person. So, yeah, he obviously made it quite a bit. There's a lot. I mean, there was even more with him that there was more with him that didn't even make it. There's a good few hours with him that didn't even make it. So,
I completely understand. Look, we talk for hours doing this podcast alone, and we have to do plenty of editing, so I can kind of appreciate that. On Ben Godfrey, he was actually very kind to me in this season because my wife's auntie works with his dad, proper friend of friend, but for our wedding day, he actually signed a card for us.
yeah,
Very nice.
he's a
Yeah,
good guy,
he's
yeah.
like a nice guy. Yeah, which
Yeah,
thankful for
he
as
sort of
well.
did a conversation about what it's like, because obviously he'd had his broken leg, hadn't he?
Of course, yeah.
So it was kind of a conversation about what that's like as a player when, that happens and how you're then fighting your way back in the team. And it was interesting and everything, but so much happened. I mean, if it had been a really quiet season with no drama, you'd have probably heard
Yeah, well,
that.
if Everton stay up, because he breaks it like when the linesman doesn't flag first game of the season, about 10 minutes in. If the linesman flags, it is quite an interesting story. But like you say, with it being Everton, there's never just one thing going on.
Yeah.
There's always a million one things going on. What are the strengths of the series? And I think some of the Everton as a football club are generally getting an awful lot better. And I think the game is raising the awareness of the women's game. And I found that really interesting about the series as well. That look. Like everyone wants to know about the men's team, etc. But I thought the series was really balanced and the focus on both. I do want to talk to you a little about that, but before I do, Kev has asked me to ask you this specific question. He takes
Okay.
a young lad set to Walton Hall Park quite a
Is
bit.
this why he's not here?
But no, it's a nice question, don't worry. He's asked me to ask you if you think the Jess Park's finish in the Anfield Derby is the coolest goal you've seen from an Everton player, because she. For those of you, if
Oh.
you've somehow haven't seen it, the way she sits the goalkeeper and the defender down before rolling it in, it's surreal. There's some Evertonians in the cop, but it's a great finish, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was bizarre in itself that Liverpool chose to put the away end in the cup. But anyway, yeah. Oh, what a player Jess Park is. And I think, she actually bought into Everton as well. She loved playing at Everton, but obviously had to go back to City. And I think if there was any way, I think it would have been great for her to maybe have had a second loan season to have done last season. I think that would have been great because I think she would have definitely played every game. But what a player. And just every time she got the ball in a game, you just felt something was going to happen. And yeah, she's got such a future in her. Yeah. But yeah, I get it. I agree. I thought the women were brilliant in it. Yeah, obviously Gabby was in it, and then obviously she left that summer. Nicoline Sorensen, who I've got a lot of time for and I still keep in touch with, talking about ACLs. Again, there was a lot more of that. We delved into kind of about the medical side of that with women and why it's six times more prevalent in the women's game and sort of what has to go into it. But again, some of that we couldn't squeeze it all in. Izzy's in it as well, Izzy Christiansen. All these people as well. What's lovely is I still keep in touch with them all. I was speaking to Izzy only the other day, and yeah, I still keep in touch with Nico, and you know, she's gone back home now and has retired, but she's doing loads of media stuff, so keep in touch with her. Yeah, it's that they're all great, and that was something we were quite keen to do as well as and I think I loved the bit near the end of the series with Lucy and Megan, Lucy Hope and Megan Finnegan. And yeah, they were just sort of chatting and bumped into them, and we did a quick recording about their season was sort of done. They had a game left, and we were safe. You know, the women's side were safe, but sort of how what was going on with the men's side was impacting them. And I thought that was because it does, because everybody's under the same roof. It's not like some clubs where the women's side are elsewhere. And again, so it's interesting just sort of as the three of us to have that conversation about how it was impacting us in there. Just see, you know, and you do, they were, I think it was sort of Meg said, you know, you see them in the gym, and she said, I start thinking, how can I help?
Yeah.
So I'm just, and I, that's how I felt. I'd go, right, okay, how can I? It's ridiculous because there is nothing I could do but just sort of like, you know, being upbeat and being positive. And so yeah, but in short, yeah, Jess Parks, but yeah, what a goal. What a goal. What a player.
It's a brilliant goal. I just love the aesthetic of both the goalkeeper and the defender going down to ground. And it, you touched upon the ACL stuff there. I think that's something that is kind of rightly coming into the broader consciousness because it is a real problem in the women's game, and like you say, being six times more likely. And I think it's important as well because the amount of money that's in the men's game, maybe there's not always the money in the women's games to give people the rehab, the facilities. Some clubs might be able to, but compared to the men's game where, you'll get flown abroad to top surgeons or whatever. There's still a lot of work to be done there. And I think that was something that I really found eye-opening about the series and I really enjoyed that it was given that exposure. I know you might think, well, loads edited out, but I think the fact you still raised it and fit it in is something that you should be really proud of. It's a really good part of the series. Going back bit towards the men's team, there's a particular game I want to ask you about. We will get to the very last game of the season, but there was a real what I felt was an idea, and I think Everton did really well to come back from it. How were things around the camp after the Newcastle defeat? Because that was a real killer, wasn't
I knew you were going to say that
it?
because everyone knows my meltdown in the car is.
I know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that way.
Do you know what? I was asked, obviously, you know, like there's BBC Studios is a huge thing, and you know, it was their sort of their thing, and I was just the person in there. And there was a lot of people in London working on it, and you know, sound designing and editing and all that kind of stuff. And they sort of got me to do this audio diary type of thing, and I don't know. I didn't know how I felt about doing that, and I just thought, well, I'll do it, and then it might not even make it anyway. And then thinking, I remember when it came out, I thought, oh, that meltdown in the car after Newcastle. I just thought people are going to think I'm a complete idiot losing the plot. But a few people have said that's how they felt.
Yeah, I
Oh,
still
that
did.
felt. Oh,
It
yeah,
was
that. Fe
horrible.
I mean, I don't need to remind anyone that felt tough, didn't it?
It was hard. I mean, the only thing I was able to give me even some perspective was I got married on the Saturday. I knew I was planning my wedding, and I was like, that's the only thing that's going to get me through this. I'm gonna focus on that. I don't have to worry about Everton wedding day. I remember
Yeah.
saying to Emma, my wife, "Look,
Look,
we'll go away. We won't worry about Everton, but."
yeah, that was that. It's, I still think now that I think that was a real low point, and it just, I'm a very positive person, and I'm always kind of, you know, right, it's, you know, it's fine. We can grind the results out. We can get this, we can get that, we get it. But it tested my resolve, did that one. I think because the bus had been bought back for that one for a game. Sort of everybody got up for it, didn't they? Everyone was outside, and then the fireworks, somebody was putting fireworks
Yeah.
off, I think, behind the Bullens and stuff. And I don't know, it felt rough that.
Because we started the game well, and
Yeah.
I don't think it was a lack of effort from the players, and I don't want to
No,
as if
and I
it
think they were
just wasn't
possibly a bit
working.
sort of, and I think there was that awful feeling of here we go again from the previous season. Yeah, look. Do you know what? All credit at this point to Sean Dyche, because I've said it before, his sports psychology and the way he manages a team when, you know, it felt like everything was just I mean, the next game was then Leicester, wasn't it? And
Yes.
Sheamus then goes off on a stretcher, and that's his season done. And when things were going bad, they were going really bad. And again, sort of, the board were nowhere around games, and there
No.
was all kind of that falling out. We didn't really know what a PSR charge was, let's face it, but that had then happened just, I think rounds of February, about the March, hadn't it,
Yeah,
before
it was
that?
starting to creep out around then.
Yeah, so it was all starting to spin a little bit. And sort of players were just racking up injuries, and it was just really hard. I think DCL was he out again at that point?
Yeah, well, he comes back, doesn't he? Because he scores against Leicester. He has one disallowed against Newcastle, but then and he plays against City, but he
Is
ends
it
up
worth?
picking
Oh
up.
no, the penalty's against us, isn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah,
he
it's
does
hard
end
to
up.
remember now. It's just
There's
like a
so
big
much goes
blur.
on. Well, there's a
Yeah,
little.
in Finch Farm, genuinely, in answer to your question there, in the middle of Finch Farm, the way that was the nicest place to be at that point because it felt like everyone was together. Kind of genuinely, I know he says it a lot, like, oh, block out the noise and all that noise. And he says that a lot, does the manager. But genuinely, in Finch Farm, it was just managed to, like, right, that's it. When we're in here, we all stick together. And even things like TV started to be, there's a lot of TVs in Finch Farm with,
Yeah.
Sky Sports News going. A lot of them, the channels were switched. So it'd be like racing or F1 on or something like that, just to sort of switch it off and make sure that that wasn't constantly going.
Yeah.
It's hard because, I'm sure the players, well, they did, and you hear from them in the series and go home and think about it. And you do. And like the rest of us, you would come home. I would drive out of Finch Farm and start doing the maths and
Yeah.
watching games that, you're watching thinking you can impact. And even the manager, who's very sort of, he's not superstitious or anything like that. I did ask him it once, we went back in the summer and we were safe and things. And, even he said he started watching things thinking, right, could I impact? And even he was going, this is ridiculous. At some point you've just got to go, right, that's it, focus on what you can do. He didn't expect it to go to the last game. I don't think anyone did. And then when it did, and obviously I can't tell you my stress levels making a series that nobody knew about, that was lying about where I was and covering my tracks and being in there and trying to be positive and then thinking, oh no, I've made a series here that now it's come to the last game and is anyone even going to listen to it? So yeah, I mean, it was the manager definitely. All credit to the manager at that point, and whether he's a Marmite manager, I know some people don't particularly get what he's about, but wow, that was a masterclass in sports psychology. He
Well, it is,
was
I mean,
absolutely
because
superb.
I think a lot of fans were resigned after the Newcastle game, and that point at last, I mean, there's a big turning point with the save penalty of Jordan Pickford. But just before we go on to the final game season, I just want to touch on the manager. Obviously, you've built a brilliant rapport with both him and Frank. I suppose a lot of people can see they're different, but would you say there's any overlap between them in terms of their personalities, or how would you find them different, I suppose?
Yeah, oh, do you know what? I've not been asked that before, actually. I mean, different ways of coming across. I think the similarity is both protect their players. I think maybe in slightly different ways. And I think what's easy to forget with Frank is because he's so famous, because he's been so successful and won everything that he can win, in domestic football. I think the problem is that everybody forgot he was a rookie manager. And he'd also, I feel bad for him because he'd been at Derby, Chelsea when things were bad and, transfer bans and all that. Derby was not in a great place. And then he came to Everton and that had a lot of problems as well. So he'd sort of known nothing but chaotic clubs. So it would be nice for him to maybe get a club that's just calm and see what he could do. Because I think there's a good manager in there. I think it was sort of everything else that got on top of him. And I think the difference between them, there were similarities in, yeah, they would protect the players and hard work and work ethic, both incredibly hardworking. I think the difference is maybe Frank's looking at it from how he played. This is just my complete layman's view of it, is a bit like we saw with Vincent Kompany at Burnley. I think an exceptional player and sometimes managing a way that they used to play or in teams that they would have played in. I think that's the difference, is Dice just took it right back to basics. And, it didn't have to be pretty because it was about getting the points on the board. And I think maybe that was the starkest difference. I think sports psychology wise, Dice was very different. And it was fascinating. I've got a lot of time. I think people know I've got a lot of time for him, given how he came in and what he did. And it was fascinating to watch him work and how he does work. His sort of team around him as well, Ian Wone, Steve Stone, all have known each other such a long time. And I think that comes into play as well. Joe Edwards, lovely, lovely guy. You hear him in the series as well. Lovely.
Yeah, it comes across well,
But
and
again, but very young and very new. And I think that's kind of the difference. So it needed someone to come in that had that experience of what it's like when it's tough, when the pressure's on. So that's probably, yeah, there were similarities in that they protected their players and worked, work ethic was incredible. But that was the difference, yeah, it's kind of knowing how to handle that level. And there's a difference, isn't there? Frank's probably played in high pressure situations of a Champions League final or whatever, but it's different pressure when you're at the bottom and battling against the drop. Plus, he'd just done it as well, so it takes it out of
he's
you.
very tired. Yourself working as a professional, kind of just within it. You're seeing how exactly it is, and I think as well, to contrast to playing, you've got the responsibility of the team, but you can kind of affect it, and you've got your individual responsibility. Whereas as a manager, you're responsible for everyone and everything, and there's a lot
Yeah.
to do that. That's a quite a
And
right.
as we've seen with Daisho over the last sort of 18 months, is he's had to answer questions that are nothing to do with him, and he's had to sort of be the front of the voice of the club, because there's been nobody. I mean, Kevin Thirlwall, again, I've got a lot of time for, and that took some convincing to get him to do the series, and he did, and I thought he came across fantastic.
He does
But
come in
he
well.
doesn't have to do press conferences every week, and I think given the situation, I think that took its toll on Frank pretty quickly. And I just think, he didn't have it probably a quarter as bad as what Dyche has ended up with sort of the situation. So I think sometimes you end up with the right manager at the right time for the situation. And I think for my personal view on that is Sean Dyche is the right man.
Oh well, yeah. Well, I can. Well, yeah. I think particularly in this season, he does really good job. Comes in with some 15 points after 20 games. Rock bottom of the league, and I know what you say about it going down to the last day. But actually, I think at certain times in this season, if someone said to you, "It's in your hands on the last day," a lot of fans would have been like, "I will absolutely take that." We'll touch on that a bit now. The last day, just kind of want to go back to your superstition point, because obviously I've mentioned before, I got married in the middle of all this. I'm that superstitious that I got some nice special Simpsons socks from me and my best men. I call them my lucky socks, so I wore them to the Bournemouth game. So superstition does kind of spread around to other people. On the day of the Bournemouth game, it felt really weird to be. I felt like the half four kickoff time was the worst possible thing, so I almost just wanted it to just be done. Either way, obviously you want a positive outcome, but I think a lot of people just, with especially it being the second season on the spin, people needed a resolution, didn't they? They needed, some kind of steer. What was it like for you on the day? I know you're going to pub, but I just want your perspective on the day.
I mean, I wouldn't want to relive
No.
that
I remember just
day.
thinking
Yeah, just
of.
the things now I remember, it was a boiling hot day.
Yeah,
Like
it was.
absolutely, as you said, and Mark Chapman says it in the series. Mark says, and he was great to work with because, there was a script, but a lot of it he kind of put in himself. So a lot of it, and he says in it, no one was, what, why do we have a 4:30 kickoff on that last day? It do, just do it at like 10 a.m. and get it done. Because I remember getting to Goodison earlier than I think I've ever been ahead of a game. I was there before midday. And I just remember thinking, it's really busy. And there was loads there, loads of people there. And it was just, and everyone I spoke to, it was just sort of, I'd just rather get up and get here. Just want to get here,
Definitely.
get this done, and yeah, do what we're going to do. So I remember that. I remember recording around Goodison. There was the guys, Ryan and his dad. There's so many people in the series that I met fleetingly, but I still remember
Stick
that
with
they'd
you,
flown
yeah.
over from Florida. They were Scousers that had emigrated to Florida. I flew over for 24 hours, literally, to go to the game. They haven't had any
Wow.
sleep. and just bumped into them. So things like that, and people sort of saying, there was people that don't have a ticket that just wanted to be there
Be
because they
around
felt,
it and be near it, yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
And so that all felt really emotional. And then being in there, I remember the noise of the game kicking off, the noise throughout the first half. I remember hearing Leicester had scored. I remember that. And that obviously meant we
Yeah.
dropped in the bottom three. And then I just remember sort of having a moment. The players went in and it felt a bit like, God, 45 minutes, that's
Half time
it.
was tough, wasn't it? I remember seeing
Yeah.
on the Sky
But I
screen they had been
remember the noise
relegated.
from the Gladys Street creeping up. And it just built, that volume built. And by the time the players came out again, everyone was sort of back up and fighting. And I know since that what's brilliant is the players didn't know, genuinely didn't know what the
Really,
Leicester
that's, I think
score
that's a
was.
good thing, actually, to be honest with you, because there's.
Yeah. They genuinely didn't know. And they were asking, and I know people were going, do we tell them? Do we not tell them? But I know somebody that was at the Leicester game and it was completely reversed because by the time Doucouré scored, they knew, and apparently the crowd and the players knew. So I think fair play again to the Goodison crowd there because they didn't get nervous, they kept playing. I was worried at half time because I wasn't 100% sure where the goal was coming from.
That was my thought. It was like I thought
Not,
we were hoping
yeah.
for something, but I didn't see the goal. Like,
I couldn't see us conceding,
no.
but I couldn't, and I could, but obviously it wasn't enough by that point.
Well, the chance was falling to Idrissa Gueye, which was a worry for me. As brilliant as he was on the day, I was like, well, if Idrissa is the one who's doing all the shooting,
Yeah,
we're in
and they
trouble.
weren't going anywhere near, and I was thinking, oh God. And then I'll never ever, I hope I'll never ever forget for as long as I live, it leaving Corey's foot, and then the noise that came out of everybody. It was like, I don't know, it was the weirdest noise we all made, and I fell over some chair, the seats in front. And bear in mind as well, the whole time at half time, I'm thinking, I've got my recording kit in my bag under my
Yeah.
seat. And the guy that sits next to me had no idea. And I go to games, and he's a mate of mine, and he had no idea I was making that
Wow.
series.
Well done.
So it was hidden from so many people. And he kept saying it because I kept thinking, God, she's nervous, like, but more nervous than
Than the
everybody
reason,
else.
yeah.
And yeah, because I just kept thinking, I've got to go down to the tunnel after this, and I didn't want to be recording.
No, you don't want to be recording the way I get
I don't
that.
want it happening. I don't want to have to record that. So yeah, and then when they put up the 10 minutes, I just remember thinking, are you messing? Are you actually trying to kill me? Because and then I sort of said to my friend when the full time whistle went, and I kind of left, I went, I've got to go and do something for work.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then I remember going through the tunnel door, and I fell through the door onto some people that had been part of. I mean, a lot of staff didn't know the series was being recorded as well. So I literally fell into a couple of people that had obviously been part of sort of the negotiations and knew about it. And I just burst into tears, and they were in tears, and I just went, don't make me do this again. Yeah, and then but then the stress still wasn't over for me because all the media were in the tunnel and they didn't know that the series was being made, and you have to have sort of rights holders access to the tunnel, and I didn't because we weren't technically right, and that would have given the game away. So that's why I was shoved in the cupboard off the side of the tunnel, a mop bucket cupboard.
So you kind of fell into a you fell into a group of people, then you end up doing the interviews in the cupboard. So tell me a bit about that aftermath, because it does seem a bit chaotic when you listen to it on the series.
Yeah, it genuinely was as chaotic, and it was probably the worst interview ever I've ever done. I looked so unprofessional. I was covered in dirt off the chairs where I'd fallen over, and also honestly, just a complete mess, really embarrassing. I don't think anyone cared. Yeah, so I was hidden away at that point. So it was just a really odd experience, and they sort of ushered, you hear Tarky, he comes in, and he was like shoved in this cupboard as well. And it was really hot in this cupboard because it was
It
clearly
was a
the
roasting
windows.
day, wasn't it? It was a very
Yeah, and
warm
it was
day.
so it was about honestly well over 100 degrees in this. So I was sweating, and then they brought the manager in, and he was like, why is it so hot in this like mop thing? Yeah, so it was just chaotic. And then I remember feeling 10 ton lighter as I walked to my car that night. I don't know what time it was I left. I don't know. I lost all track of time, but I just remember being so relieved and I slept so well that night. And then I had a load of sort of months of the series still being done in secret, and I went back in a few more times. So yeah, still the stress wasn't fully over, but at least kind of we'd stayed up. But yeah, I have Addison's disease, which I'm relatively open about. So I take steroids to keep alive. So you're supposed to avoid stress.
And you're involved heavily with Everton, and you're supposed to avoid stress. I know people have said that elsewhere, but I feel someone who went grey prematurely because of them. They're not the best tonic for avoiding stress.
No, and get put in there to make a series when everything's going wrong, and then yeah, so I take steroids. So I take steroids different parts of the day, and then if you're going through stress, you take more steroids. And then the worst bit was, stupidly, I managed to, in the chaos of the game, lost my water bottle as well.
All right,
So I
okay.
always have a bottle of water in my bag so I can take it. So I couldn't. So I was chewing the steroids and they're really chalky and
Oh.
they taste disgusting. So I remember when I was in the cupboard, and then I mustn't have looked great by that point. I think it was just so stressed. And someone, Everton, went, "Do you want some water?" And I went, "Yes, please." I lost my water. And they went into one of the lounges, and the best bit was they just couldn't find a small, so it was like a massive bottle of water that must have been off the tables, that it does about 12 people. And so I was on the bucket, which I tipped upside down because my legs were like jelly. So I sat on that and I was just taking more steroids and down in this giant bottle. And that's how the manager found me.
Oh,
Like
God.
all the recording kit, which was really expensive, which I probably shouldn't say, so hopefully not at the BBC listen, was just scattered all over the floor because I kind of just like tipped the bag out. Oh, it was honestly. And then yeah, I took it. My mum messaged me going, "Are you okay?" And all I sent was back was a selfie of me on the bucket, just looking awful. You could see all the recording kit, all the stuff's all over the floor, just looking an absolute mess. And yeah, and people say, "Oh, you must have great pictures from being inside Finch Farm and inside, training for all that time." And I got to go to a behind closed doors game and stuff that Frank let me go to, all that kind of stuff. I haven't got a single picture, I promise you. I haven't got a single picture. The only picture I've got of me making an entire series inside Everton is on a bucket.
Well, I mean, that does feel very evident. If that makes you feel any better, that does feel like the lens Everton get people to go through. And it was a difficult season, but I've said this previously. Obviously, the series really documents it well, and that's something that we're trying to kind of put our take on it in this podcast. But I think it's also really good that you speak about the Alissons there, because it's not something that I have to admit until I've seen you speak about it. It's not something that I've been fully aware of, and. Just signposts. I know you spoke on other platforms, but you're quite open about it on your social media as well, aren't you? With links to the relevant charities and organisations as well.
I mean, I've had it 8 years now, so there is no cure. That's just kind of, I'm kept alive artificially using steroids. I've had a few close calls with it, four close calls, and I'm very lucky they managed to get me back in time. So that was, I'm kind of, I hid it for a while, and then I just thought, I'm kind of sick of nobody knowing what this is. So I don't really have much of a platform, but if anyone is following me, I do bang on about Addison's now, which, yeah, it's lovely. More and more people now know about it. And I just, Evertonians, I just love with all my heart, because there was a lady who tweeted that she'd had an Addison's diagnosis. She wasn't a football fan. She didn't follow Everton, but somebody who was an Evertonian spotted her tweet and said, and she said, "I just don't know anything about it." And they went, "We know somebody," and copied me in. And I've since had a conversation with her. And yeah, so more and more people are, so there's only 9,000 in 67 million with it. There's very little research because it's not really worth much. JFK had it. I'm on the same medication JFK was on in the 1950s. So that shows lack of progression with it, because it's not worth any money to drug companies. So yeah, it's nice. Yeah, so there's the Addison Society that do stuff as well, and then in Scotland, if you're north of the border, JADA, JADA, which is named after someone called Jordan, who sadly passed away with Addison's disease, because unfortunately that does happen more frequently than people know about. And I came across them thanks to, I'm sure she won't mind me saying, Lucy Hope, who's in the women's team, and
All
Jordan was
right,
her
okay.
friend.
All right.
Yeah.
I see.
Jordan was a friend of hers and her husband's. And when I was making the series, she was following me online. She said, "Have you got Addison's disease?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then she went, "My friend had Addison's. Unfortunately, he didn't make it." So yeah, so she put me in touch with them, and so I spoke to his mum on DMs, and yeah, she sent me some badges and stuff. So yeah, if you give those a follow, that I usually give them retweets and stuff on my socials, and it's just something that yeah, people don't know about, and I don't mind that people don't know about it, because it's very, very rare and very unusual to have. Nobody in my family has ever had it. So yeah, I'm just a lucky one. I'm just a unique one. Yeah, but that's what it is. So yeah, I appreciate anyone who takes the time.
Good. Well, glad to hear you're doing well in the circumstances. And obviously, it's someone that we as a pod will share and whatnot, because
Oh, thank you.
hopefully a little bit of awareness can help everyone. Well, Juliet, thanks an awful lot for your time this evening.
Got a fair point, mate. 27 years.
Let them make you a clown.
No, we haven't.
Slice the lonely phone 7.